Picture with me for a moment the disciples, huddled in that upper room, terrified out of their minds. What led them to be so terrified? What's going on? Well, honestly, it's pretty easy to understand. Jesus is dead, their great leader, who they had been following for 2 years now, and they are now considered a rebel group. And according to the Roman law, that's considered punishable by death. So they have a lot to be afraid of. And so here they are, huddled in the upper room, the place where they celebrated the last moments with Jesus, that place where they encountered the intimacy of the Last Supper. There is where they spend that time, but they're afraid. They're afraid of what might happen to them. They're afraid of what's going on in the world. They're realizing Jesus is gone, and even if he rose from the dead, what does that mean for them? They have every reason to be terrified. But I think if we really do take a moment and recognize what's going on in their lives, we also recognize what's going on in our lives. We also have a lot of fear and anxiety. We wonder about the future and what's going on. And in a more prominent way, with all the abuse scandals going on in the church right now, people are very afraid, and they're very angry and sad and frustrated with what's going on. And that's what I kind of want to focus on today, because we all experience that. To take a step back for a moment, in the 18th century, the great French leader Napoleon came up to Cardinal Consalvio and said to him, "I will destroy the church." Cardinal Consalvio replied to him saying, "Oh, little man, do you think you can accomplish what centuries of priests and bishops have tried to do and failed?" There's a point to it. If we are not careful and we look at the church as a whole, we think of it as this perfect society or this place where everything should work out wonderfully. Honestly, it's never been that way. Maybe for one moment, and that's when the Holy Spirit came down and it was over. It all went downhill from there. But there's a point to this. We start with the disciples huddled in the upper room, this moment in which you think they'd be excited, Jesus rose from the dead. They're not. They're terrified. That's the start of the church. And then if we go forward 3 centuries, we have division and scandal and all these things going on as heresy after heresy and idea and ideologies confront one another for the next 4 centuries. It doesn't get better. Then we have the age of the weird popes from the 8th through 10th century, like Pope Formosus, who we don't really know what happened in his mind, but he signed this letter that later was condemned as a heresy. Realizing that, they exhumed his body, dressed him in papal regalia, put him on the throne of St. Peter, tried him as a heretic, and threw his body in the river. We have bad moments. Then we have the Crusades and everything going on with that. Then we have Pope Alexander VI in the middle of the 16th century, who is considered the worst pope of all time. He had sons of children, he had wives and concubines on the side, he spent tons of money. He's actually responsible for most of the building projects in Rome. And then we have Napoleon, who's trying to destroy the church. Time and time again, we are just scandal after scandal after scandal, even into the modern era, where we have the sex abuse scandals, the financial crisis of the Vatican Bank, and even inter-scandal stuff going on. What do we do with all that? Well, we have to remember one thing. If there was a golden age in the church, this wonderful moment where we encountered God and everything was perfect, there's a big problem. If we were able to make the church go into a golden age, it's all about us now. The church is about God. And that's really important to recognize. We don't have a CEO. The Pope is not the CEO of Catholic Incorporated, in that he goes, "Look, I'm going to make the decisions." No, Jesus is our head. He is the CEO, and that's really important to keep in mind. He's the one that keeps the church going. And that's why today is so important. Today we celebrate the Holy Spirit, the great gift of God, his very spirit, his life and energy that continue to pervade through the entirety of the church. One of the greatest miracles of all time is that the Catholic Church still exists, because we really shouldn't, by all means. But that's the gift of the Holy Spirit, who calls us in age after age to reform our lives, to turn back to God, and to remember, the church only enters a golden age when we turn to God with all our hearts. That's all that matters, and that's why we have so many problems, because this shows God's great mercy upon us and what's going on. But we can take this even a step further. We can go to our own church here in St. Superior, or even the churches of Montana, or even our own lives, and recognize the same fear, anxiety, and problems. We're not perfect. We have our disputes and disagreements here, both in this church and in the diocese and the state and the country, world, go as far as you want. We're not perfect, but we're still here. And even in our own lives, we still have this same sense that, you know, I'm kind of a hypocrite sometimes. You know, I kind of screwed up quite a bit. You know, things didn't work out the way I wanted them to. But it all works out. It really does. because we have the gift of God's Spirit with us at all times, helping us forward, moving us along, keeping that unity, making sure everything works out in the end. Which is why the two most important elements of today's homily and the core things I want you to get out of this is hope and prayer. Hope. Hope is not a feeling or an ideology, like I woke up one morning and I was hopeful and it's great. That's nice, but that's really a gift. Hope is a virtue. As a virtue, it's like the rest of them, as like prudence or justice or whatever. It needs to be strengthened like a muscle. So we have to work it to really build that sense of hope in our lives. And it only works when we have things that try our hope, make us feel hopeless, make us realize that things aren't going well. That's when hope is really perfected or tried, strengthened, growing as a virtue. That's why all these things are important for us, that we don't lose that sense of hope. Remember, God is here. He's always going to be here. The Holy Spirit's always around. He's going to keep the unity. He's going to keep things going, even if we don't see it. And everything will work out. We have to keep that hope alive, that little burning flame that reminds us God will take care of everything. We must keep our hope firmly rooted in Him. And then the example I gave a moment ago with St. Catherine of Siena. Prayer is so critical. Prayer is so important. Our Lady of Fatima, when she appeared in Fatima, Portugal, said one thing very prominently. Pray. Pray for the world. Don't stop praying. This is our great gift. The ability to pray for the world, for each other, for the things going on. Constantly pray. And yes, it does work. St. Catherine is a wonderful example. This woman, who at that point women weren't all that prominent or powerful, was able to convince the Pope to go back to Rome. Think about that for a moment. Prayer works. So we have to be people of prayer, constantly praying, even if it doesn't seem like our prayers will be answered. Prayer reminds us that God has the upper hand. He will take care of things. We give it to the one who can take care of it, because we can't. We'll make a lot more problems. You know that great saying out there, if you find the perfect church, leave, because you'll ruin it? That idea. We need to keep that prayer alive. Keep being people of prayer. Keep working towards a constant routine of prayer, praying for the people of Superior, the people of the world, the people of the church, all things. This is critical for us. And that's why we must remember hope and prayer. They will transform the world. This is where we need to be. This is where we're called to. Let us become people of hope and prayer.